You're listening to Environmental Health Chat, a show from the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences that explores the connections between our health and our world. I'm Ashley Ahern. Where we grow up and how we grow up affects how our brains develop. But of course, it's a complicated web of factors that play into brain development and cognitive ability.
I think it's an ongoing open question, but there's a lot of research suggesting there's various parts of an environmental component. Social aspects like social stressors, education is an environmental factor, the types of schooling and the resources.
Megan Herting has dedicated her career to piecing together the ways in which various factors, sociological, biological, and environmental, play into how kids' brains develop.
And now we know various pollutants, lead exposure, for example, has been linked to brain health and brain outcomes. So we know there's a lot going on in terms of what we're exposed to outside our own bodies that might matter.
Herting is an assistant professor at the University of Southern California and directs the Herting Neuroimaging Lab at USC. She lived in several different cities as a kid, Chicago, Albuquerque, El Paso, and that got her thinking about urban environments and how different they can be from one city to another. And even within the same city, there can be big differences between neighborhoods.
So whether there's parks nearby, whether or not there's factories nearby, but you see these kids in different neighborhoods and start to think about what are these environmental contexts or what are these environmental influences mean for a kid who's developing in different regions of the country and or different parts of one city.
To start analyzing those factors and understanding what they mean for kids, Herting joined a team of scientists gathering data from more than 11,000 kids in 21 cities across the country. It's called the ABCD Study, or Adolescent Brain Cognitive Development Study. It's funded by the National Institutes of Health, and it's the largest long-term study of brain development and childhood health in the United States.
So I am just one very small piece of this magnificent study, and we are really fortunate to have so many children and parents come to us each year, share with us their experiences, let us scan the brain of the developing youth, and learn just about how everything from social cultural environments, in our case, air pollution and other factors might influence how the brain wires itself.
The ABCD study is providing a wealth of baseline data about children's physical development, their education, their community support systems, their family makeups, all factors that can contribute to the way their brains develop. Herting thinks of that kind of data as valuable context for the brain scans, also known as MRI, and cognitive analysis that are also conducted as part of the ABCD study.
So we use MRI to study the brain structure and functioning. It's a proxy for how it activates and how it's functionally organized. And then we also ask a number of different puzzle and games or tests to try to get at individual differences on how people do with things like paying attention or remembering items, things that are really important for daily functioning, for school, and for later on being able to attain jobs and other successful functioning in everyday life.
Herting and her colleagues are 5 years into the 10-year study. And with this wealth of data, Herting realized she wanted to go deeper. She wanted to look at factors at the hyperlocal level and how they might play a role in children's brain development. So she teamed up with Daniel Hackman, another researcher at University of Southern California, with a background in social work.
He has a strong background in thinking about more of the sociology behind neighborhoods, things like crime or poverty. And so we were very much interested in understanding how community characterization of a neighborhood could relate to child development.
When study participants came in for the ABCD study, they were asked where they lived. That information was used with their permission to then map the characteristics around their home using census data.
And what we did is we looked at a couple of different variables in those census tracts. We looked at whether or not the percentage of residents with at least a high school diploma, what did that look like? We looked at the median family income, the unemployment rates in those areas. We looked at the percentage of families living below federal poverty level, and even the number of single parent households.
Herting and her colleagues were able to assemble a snapshot, if you will, that connected the neighborhoods where these 9 to 10-year-old kids lived with their cognitive scores and brain structure.
And what we found was that the higher these characteristics of neighborhood, quote unquote, disadvantage, meaning that there's less people with a high school diploma, lower family income, more families living below the federal poverty level, those were associated with overall poorer performance on the summary scores for the cognitive tests we give. And those things included things like inhibition and attention. So being able to withhold a response, pay attention to learning new information, as well as things like working memory, which is your ability to hold and manipulate information in your head in order to process the world around us.
Kids from more disadvantaged neighborhoods tended to have lower whole brain cortical surface area. Herting also found some specific patterns of brain size in places like the frontal lobes, the temporal lobes, and the parietal lobes.
And what this means is that we just are looking at the overall number of folds in the brain and the size of the brain. And so we saw that higher disadvantage was linked to smaller, essentially, volumes or surface of these parts of the brain.
The findings, which showed disparities in children's brain health between affluent and disadvantaged neighborhoods, were consistent across the 21 cities where data was collected from more than 8,500 study participants. Okay, so that's horrifying when you sit and think about it, right? That the brains of children from disadvantaged neighborhoods look and develop differently from children in more affluent neighborhoods. But Herting cautioned, it's not that simple. This data represented a snapshot in a child's life, not a long-term assessment. At the individual level, Herting said there were kids from affluent neighborhoods who tested the same or worse than kids from disadvantaged neighborhoods, and vice versa. And
the effect sizes were small. We're not talking about if you pulled up a brain of someone from a disadvantaged neighborhood versus an affluent neighborhood, that you would be able to tell with the human eye what the difference is. It's not that large of an effect. And so this one snapshot of an association is not deterministic by any means. But it does say that we should be paying attention to neighborhoods, that neighborhoods matter.
Herting and her colleagues at the Southern California Environmental Health Science Center, which is funded by the NIEHS, have prioritized sharing their findings. They've developed infographics about how various factors might influence brain development and shared them with community groups and other organizations in Los Angeles. She understands that the findings may be concerning for some parents raising kids in disadvantaged neighborhoods. But for Herting, it's about empowerment. So the team included actionable strategies in the infographics for parents and community members.
We often talk about the environment influencing the brain, but the brain also can choose the environment, right? And so there is a lot to say about being able to take the information about environment and what's there and be able to empower oneself for making the best decisions for themselves and for their families.
Yeah. Was there a moment or an experience in your research that really made your findings real for you or sort of solidified your commitment to this work?
Yes. I look back at my journey of going from really studying the basic biology of the developing brain to thinking more about the social questions around us, of families and communities around us. And part of that was becoming a member of my current neighborhood. Hmm. So I live in East Los Angeles, and my in-laws and my extended family are from here, third generation Mexican-American. And when I integrated into their family and came into this neighborhood to be a community member, it was striking how the lack of resources for these very hardworking, multi-generational families doing the best every day to provide for their families were not being given the same neighborhood resources as other communities.
Herting hopes her research reaches the ears of policymakers and others focusing on combating inequality and disparity between neighborhoods across the country.
And that's what I think our work suggests, is that we should pay attention so that people who have to make these hard decisions about reinvesting in neighborhoods and leveling equity in America can use this to say, well, this is one more really important reason long-term for children's health and outcomes to be able to put resources into communities in every city that might need more of that support.
Yeah. Do you have kids?
I have one on the way.
Oh, congratulations.
In December. Yes, thank you. So I too will have a future child to think about, and I want the best for them, just as every other parent and grandparent I meet wants the best for their child and grandchild. I'm hoping, you know, that we have a way with this research to change the way that we structure our neighborhoods, structure equity, so that, you know, just like every parent, you know, we leave this world a better place than we found it. But, you know, I think that's always been the case when you talk to families about their children and about what they want for their children. They want the best possible outcomes. And so here's one way that as policymakers and politicians can look and say, where are we putting our resources? How are we developing equity in our communities? And I think it's worthy of further thought and is really important for everybody to be able to achieve their best self.
Megan Herting and her colleagues will continue their research for the next 5 years with the hope of mapping long-term potential outcomes and possible solutions to protect childhood brain development and health. I'm Ashley Ahern. Thanks for listening to Environmental Health Chat.